The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you have a problem with the things Christians believe. You can't take the supernatural seriously. You can't take concepts such as good and evil seriously. We've outgrown those. We've evolved beyond them. Well, my friend, if that's true, then why do you love going to the movies, particularly action movies, science fi movies? If they're not about good and evil, they're not about anything. And of course, they're supernatural. Somebody always has this power or that power. Movies like The Avengers, movies like Star Wars, and there's going to be a seventh Star Wars coming out. Good news to some, not such good news for people who wonder what they could do to ruin a great franchise, but that remains to be seen. And opinions remain to be seen. Who is not more opinionated than film critic Mark Boobian? Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Bob. I love to be opinionated all the time.
I never noticed that, Mark.
Yeah, I'm sure you haven't. It's not just on your show. Yes, I'm told all the time that I'm so humble, but
aren't you glad you finally came up with an outlet for you?
Yeah, right. There you go.
Conversations that Mark and I have had for years after having Guy's movie night. Now the whole world gets to hear them.
All right. Well, it is actually a blessing to me, to be perfectly honest. So before getting into the Avengers, I did want to backtrack a little tiny bit because last time I was on, we talked about some of the Academy Award movies and particular Birdman, which you asked me a question at near the end of the show, and I kind of played politician.
Regarding the ending?
Regarding the ending of the movie. I played politician and didn't really answer the question. And
no, I thought you had ended it. I thought you had said he really ended up flying at the end.
I'm not sure what I said.
I wasn't sure if he was really doing that or if that was supposed to be in his head.
I think I was just as confused as you were at that point
and didn't want to admit it. They probably wanted us to be confused.
Right. So that's one actual answer. So I've got three possibilities.
Oh, okay.
Right. And the first possibility is the director's just messing with us because that's not unheard of. I mean, especially in a movie like this.
And if you mess with people and you don't answer all their questions, you might win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
It did happen here. Hey, wow. It works. The other possibility is that what he was seeing, that regarding the ending, he jumps out a window and then his daughter comes up and sees him flying.
And it was the fact that she saw it that was interesting.
Correct.
If it was just in his head, the question would be, then why did she see it?
Right. And that's where the director could be messing with us. So another possibility, it's really happened. He really did fly and she saw it. And that was something I was sort of leaning on, I guess, last time, as you point out. One other possibility that I think I've really adopted more as the most likely explanation is that when faced with seeing her father's death, she basically followed in his footsteps and denied reality and created her own.
Oh, so she was under the illusion, instead of accepting his suicide, she was under the illusion that he had flown.
Exactly. So, and that flying was his illusion, so it became hers.
That actually makes more sense than the others.
Right.
Now, has the director come out and told us which it is?
I don't know. I hope he never does because I prefer the mystery.
But yeah, I do too. That was the big thing about 2001 when that came out is people didn't understand what the heck the ending was all about. Even though Arthur C. Clarke explained more in the novel than Kubrick explained in the movie. But that was one of the novelties of it.
Yes.
Wondering what the thing was all about.
Right. And I saw it at too young of an age, I think, first time. And then somebody in high school explained it to me.
Same with me. I saw it in junior high. It bored me to death. I was confused. Then I saw it again as a young adult when VCRs first came out. And oh my gosh, I thought it was one of the most brilliant movies I've ever seen. I had a whole totally different experience the second time.
Yeah, yeah. And see, that's how I feel about it too, after watching it a couple times. And then becoming a fan of Stanley Kubrick, of course, helps quite a bit. So, you know, that's one of his great movies. So anyway, there you go for Birdman and 2001, a little extra tidbit thrown in.
So a little bit of closure on our Birdman Academy Award.
Hopefully, as much as we can give it, I guess.
Well, more than they'll get out of the director, probably.
Yes, hopefully. But, you know. So Avengers, the new Avengers movie.
Okay,
Avengers
I have Age not Ultron. Seen it yet, and you have.
I have, yep. I got lucky and got tickets to an early showing, actually, because I saw a double feature Avengers 1 and then Avengers 2 shown right afterwards. The movie is doing very well. Yes, big surprise there. It's the second biggest opening of all time at $187 million.
Well, look at all the franchises. It's not just that they had one successful Avengers movie, but each individual superhero like Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah, they've all made money.
They've all, yeah. So
the other movie that was number one, I'm sure there's, thank goodness we didn't get beat by the Avengers movie. It was actually the first Avengers movie. That's the first biggest opening in history. So the top two are Avengers and Avengers.
Was this a bigger opening than the other one?
No, this was number two. So it was a little shy. $207 million for the first one, $187 for this one. So, you know, a couple 20
Boy, somebody's
million.
Head's going to roll over that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Joss Whedon's fired.
These days, if a movie doesn't do good the first weekend, it's considered a flop. They don't give it a time to develop an audience.
It can actually be a flop, though, if it doesn't do well, because they make most of their money the first weekend. Yeah. So, but, you know,
but you'd think that with word of mouth, a movie could still develop legs, right. And that has been known to happen.
Yes, like My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Titanic, unfortunately, and maybe Avatar, I think, benefited from that as well. Yeah. So those are long-running movies that did make a lot of money. And this may end up being like that. I don't know. I doubt it, though, because it's up against a lot of summer.
What is the buzz? Movie. Are people liking it, not liking it?
I'm honestly not sure. I think I read a review.
How about the audience in the theater with you? Did they seem to enjoy it?
I mean, basically, but I think you're in trouble when the Star Wars trailer gets a bigger cheer than anything in the Avengers
that's
movie.
That's going to be. I remember when the movie The Incredibles came out and they showed the Star Wars trailer for, I guess it was...
probably episode one or two.
Yeah, maybe two. I don't know. But anyway, although The Incredibles actually was a good movie.
Great movie
actually went to see it just to see the Star Wars trailer. So I was just lucky that they happened to show a good movie with the
trailer.
Right.
Actually, a kind of a comic book type of movie, too, that wasn't. But anyway, The Incredibles was a good movie. But so Star Wars was everybody screamed and freaked out. And I've seen the trailer several times, but. And of course, I was excited too because it was fun to see and it doesn't give anything away. So that's also a really nice thing about the new Star Wars trailer. But back to Avengers, because we can talk about Star Wars all we want later. My feeling for the movie is that it was really a fun movie. It was a good movie. There's nothing really horrendously wrong with it, but it just didn't live up to my expectation primarily because of Joss Whedon, the director. He's the guy that did Buffy the Vampire Slayer and
did he direct
Angel.
The other Avengers?
Yes,
movies?
He did. So this and he's a big comic book.
He's a very good
madman. Yes, and he is a good director. But he's also a huge comic book fan. So the Avengers was the perfect thing for him to do, and he did an amazing job with the first one. Absolutely great job, and he still did a fine job here. But because I didn't have any real big surprises, it didn't really take me any place. New or really
no
different
surprises, meaning no twist in the story.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And from Joss Whedon, I really was hoping for something, maybe a little dark. Cause Buffy could be a very dark,
dark and yet funny,
just dark right and funny the at edge. The same time. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. But he wasn't afraid to get very serious with his characters in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And that's kind of been his trend, even in some of his movies. So I was hoping for something a little more depth than the first Avengers movie, but really it just sort of stayed pretty surfacey. Another thing that I really found problematic, and this was right from the beginning, and this really tore me out of the movie, and I think it really tainted my experience, is that the special effects in the very first scene, it's 100% computer generated. The people are obviously computer generated in this scene. Tons of stuff going on.
So they're usually computer generated anyway. You mean you could see.
You could really tell.
And you're distracted by your knowledge that it's computer generated.
Yeah. And what happened, though, is they didn't render it correctly. See, the animation is rendered in the end before it goes to film. And they render basically one frame at a time. So they render 24 frames per second. But if they don't render all 24, things start to skip. And you can actually tell. Now, this is a thing that happens in computer gaming. I know what a big computer game fan you are, Bob, so you could tell the audience all about it, but I will instead. I'll spare you that. That when your computer slows down, you drop frames, and then you see this jittery motion in your games. Well, that happens in animation exactly the same if they don't have the time before the release of the movie to finish.
Why wouldn't
frames.
They have the time with a budget like that?
Yeah,
they certainly had the money.
The budget went into a lot of animation. There were tons of computer generated imagery.
So do you think it was an oversight, or do you think they deliberately were cutting corners?
I don't know. I think that they may have just plain ran out of time and they had to, and they maybe planned to. You can always render in the middle stuff after you do the first run. And maybe they thought they'd be able to do that. I have no idea. And it may have just been an accident, a glitch.
We need the director's cut, the not so aware of computer generated edition.
The much smoother version where we have all the frames and it looks actually like a movie. But unfortunately, that happened
several times, because you said it was the first scene.
It was, I noticed it right away. And then
it continued.
Yeah, it caught my eye several times in the movie. Okay. Now, one thing it did create is a little faster action, I thought. And I thought maybe they did that. That could be a reason they do it deliberately. But it still was really distracting for somebody like me who plays computer games and knows that effect and fan of animation, knows that effect.
How much do you think they get away with that, in as much as it's based on a comic book anyway and people are expecting it to be somewhat surrealistic?
In this case,
it's like I saw that a lot in Titanic, which was not based on a comic
right.
book. Right. And although the plot looked like it was written as a comic book. But you could really see the computer-generated people in Titanic. And there it was very glaring. But in a comic book movie, I'm almost wondering if I wouldn't look at that and go, it's,
the technology has grown leaps and bounds since Titanic, and the people look fairly real on the screen. It's just the motion, the movements.
Right.
There's an unnaturalness sometimes to the way people move when they're animated, because the animation can't capture all of the nuances of human motion. That's one issue, but really in this case, it was primarily the dropped frames and a couple of places where motion was kind of not natural enough to sell me. And people may have noticed that, but I think I'm often forgiving of that. And in later scenes, when you see Ultron, he's obviously computer generated. He looks animated, but I was willing to give them that because I expected that. So there are times when it's okay, because that's just where the technology's at. There's other times, like when they're dropping frames, that it's really not okay, because it's an oversight or a problem with the creation of the movie.
Okay, the new latest Avengers movie, not exacting a glowing testimonial so far, but we'll be right back.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boubian.
Thank you, Bob. So, in terms of the storyline for Avengers, there are a couple of problems. I mentioned that there weren't any big surprises, and that's just going to be something that is throughout the movie. But there were a few things that I did find problematic with the story as well. One of the biggest ones is the Avengers end up kind of arguing and bickering a lot at certain points in the movie. Now, in the first movie, they argue and bicker a lot, because they're all individualistic in their outlook.
They're not working as a team really well.
And so they establish in that movie a way to get them to work as a team. And it's very well established. Okay, now you guys are a team. Woohoo. And you work together really well and you can win. Well, in this movie, Ultron is trying to tear them apart. And so they end up bickering a lot, and it's basically a rehash of what happened before.
So they don't pick it up from where they left off. It's kind of like, well, we'll...
Yeah,
we
let's
liked
fight
the bickering
again.
Last time, so we'll have bickering again this time.
Yeah, but I read some of the quotes from Joss Whedon, and that was not his intent. But that basically is what ended up
the
happening.
Producers tend to do that. They look more at what worked before as a formula than what's created.
Yeah, that may be the case. But again, I give Joss Whedon a lot more credit than your base standard typical director. Sort of like we would give Kubrick a lot of slack in one of his new movies because you know his past work.
Kubrick would never make a sequel of his life dependent on it.
Probably not.
He had nothing to do with 2010 when they came out with that.
Yes, and now that he's dead, he can't. So there you go. so that's a problem. And another issue that really is a personal one for me, and probably a lot of people wouldn't have this problem, but, you know, I don't like being torn out of the movie. Like I was talking about when I'm seeing the frames drop. I'm watching a movie.
You're reminded that you're watching a movie.
Yeah. So Ultron is voiced by James Spader, an actor I really love.
Oh, he's excellent.
Just enjoy the heck out of him. He's a great actor, funny guy, but also can be very dark when he needs to be.
He's in a very dark series, right?
Yes,
he is. I think it's called Blacklist.
Blacklist. Yeah. The Blacklist.
Excellent.
And he plays a character very snide, but a kind of a positive outlook, snidely about it. And gosh, that's Ultron. Oh, from beginning to end, there's no difference between the Blacklist character and Ultron. I just heard the Blacklist the whole movie. So when I say that this was personal, I mean it because I've been watching the Blacklist and I could not get away from that element. And I've seen James Spader in other things and he's not always like that character. He can be timid and calm. He can be, you know, ruthless or, you know, whatever. Whatever he's played, he can be different. He's a good actor. So he was channeling that character from the Blacklist. To me, it seemed obvious. And he wasn't doing a bad job, but I just was used to hearing that in another show. So I couldn't feel like this is a threatening character because all I hear is a guy from another TV show. So unfortunately,
which is one of the advantages of, I like it when movies use unknown actors.
Right, that's a
good
thing.
When Star Wars first came out, nobody had ever heard of Mark Hamill.
Right.
And we just thought of him as Luke Skywalker. We really hadn't heard of Harrison Ford either. And I think that worked a lot.
Right. And Peter Mayhew, whoever heard of him? Hey. Oh, he's Chewbacca, by the way. Bob, I know you knew that.
I still
that.
Haven't heard of him.
Right.
No, I wasn't aware of his name.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's famous for being very
Kenny
tall.
Kenny something or other is R2. And Anthony, is it
Kenny Baker?
Anthony Daniel.
Anthony Daniel is very good.
Yeah, but I never learned Chewbacca.
Yeah, he's actually kind of, you know, more a little behind the scenes, I guess. So that's okay. So I don't want to just talk about the problems I had with the movie. There were some really good things about the film. There's a new development that is actually okay. I guess this could be a surprise, and it was a surprise for me, but it wasn't a huge revelation that knocked me completely down. And
well, it won't be a surprise anymore for whoever's listening.
Right, probably not. But well, I can kind of do it without spoilers.
Okay. If they listen to movie reviews, you're going to hear spoilers.
All right. So anyway, there's a character who's married, and we don't know that, and he has a relationship with another character in the original Avengers movie, where you think they're going to get together. But whoa, he's married. That was a big surprise, and whoa, she knew it too. That's the other surprise. Mm. But it's handled very well, and one thing I liked about this was Joss Whedon takes them from this implied love affair that they've got going and turns them into best friends. And they even state in the movie, "We're, you know, don't mess with my best friend." This is Hawkeye and Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow. Thank you. Sorry. Anyway, so they come out as friends in the movie, which is something we don't ever really see in film so much. When there's a male and female character with charisma, they're lovers, or they're going to be, or they were, and they're going to be, and they're not going to be at the end. There's something like that going on, depending on the film. But here is a very different turn. Unfortunately, it wasn't. They were kind of minor Avenger characters in the first movie, and they have not had their own films, so they're not considered top tier. So it wasn't quite as shocking to see it with these two characters, because they're the more minor, they're the most minor of the Avengers, even though they're great actors and great characters. So it doesn't hit you super hard. It's not like Thor is married, you know, oh my gosh, what do you do with Natalie Portman, Thor? I mean, that would have been a shock. But here, this was a little bit of a surprise, but not a total knockdown. But it's still a great thing that ended up being really wonderful in the movie. And on the flip side of that, there's this forbidden love affair that's kind of starting up with Scarlett Johansson with Black Widow, and that you get to see starting to develop. And that's got a lot of tension built into it, because you know this really doesn't seem like it can work out, but you also are on their side. You want them to be, because they're both somewhat tragic figures, and for them to have each other at this point in their development as characters, it's a nice thing. So we don't know where that's going. That's something that's sort of left up in the air at the end of the film, and I like that element also, that we've got this developing love affair, but we don't know where it's headed, and there's a lot of opportunity for something good to come of it. Also a lot of opportunity for something terrible to come of it, because you can wreck something like that, but it's so far a good setup. So those are a couple of really major strengths to the Avengers. And overall, it's a very good, fun movie to see.
Just didn't live up to the first movie.
Not up to those expectations, but it's still absolutely a worthwhile and fun movie.
Well, for Mark Boobian, that's no small praise. Just for him to say he didn't hate it, that's something right there. All right, we'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
What better review of a book than to check with the customers themselves? Here is a recent customer review of Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Superior. As a middle school teacher, I am a prolific reader of juvenile fiction and an even tougher critic of the genre. With that said, I experienced sheer delight in reading the page-turner, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament by Bob Siegel. Mike, the sixth grade protagonist in the story, is a well-drawn character with all the weaknesses and strengths of a 12-year-old. Mike's e-ticket adventure engages the reader with his shenanigans of making his veggies disappear, cat talk, and creating a twin who doubles for him. Not only that, Bob Siegel skillfully weaves a subtle moral message with the metaphoric thread, which encourages a kid to be the best version of himself, all the while addressing the various angst of preteens. Finally, I was captivated to the last page, but disappointed when the Christmas ride of the magical ornament came to a satisfying conclusion. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. We're doing a pop culture version today with my good friend Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. All right, so let's talk a little bit about theme in the Avengers. There's typically, this is the first Avengers movie. I didn't see it having a ton of depth. This one has a little bit more, but it's hit and miss. I kind of just like the rest of the movie is a little bit hit and miss. One of the primary themes with the Avengers, we sort of touched on it already, is this idea of teamwork. Now, a really interesting conversation occurs very briefly between Captain America and Iron Man or someone else. It doesn't matter. But it's Captain America who's the primary. He's the guy in charge of the Avengers. So they've got to go out and fight Ultron, and they are probably going to die. That's what they're facing. And Captain America says, you know, we've got to work together. So if we win, we're going to win together. And then somebody says, Robert Downey Jr., well, what if we lose? That's a perfect Iron Man line. And the beauty of this is that there's no excuse, no sugarcoating anything. Captain America says, then we lose together too. And I love this because this really flies in the face of sort of modern American culture that, well, you can't lose. Losing is for losers, not for the heroes. Heroes never lose. Now,
well, heroes lose a lot throughout history.
Right.
But sometimes they inspire other heroes along the way.
There you go. And this is a great thing. I mean, our culture doesn't really accept that idea so much, and we want to see the heroes win. And we want to see our basketball team win. We want to see our football team win. We don't care if they get second place, if they go to the Super Bowl and come back in second place. Oh my gosh, that's the worst thing ever. They have to be the winners. And there's no, you know, there's no consolation prize.
Yeah, they win
for
the championship in their league and they're heroes. And then what do they have? The Super Bowl like 2 weeks later. And then it's like,
That's gone.
And then if they lose, nobody even thinks of them anymore as having won the championship.
Right.
They just get known as having lost the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that's a cultural problem. And I saw it in one Olympics when they first introduced the quote unquote dream team basketball team, where it was all professional basketball players and it was just made so that we could win.
Of course, I understood they did that because they were supposed to not use professionals. They were supposed to be amateurs in the Olympics, but the other countries weren't doing that.
Right.
So we said, well, okay, if we're using professionals, we'll put our team together.
Great. So we did that and we killed them.
It was a joke.
All right. And then we kept doing it.
I heard the Dream Team was just laying around the pool all day and they didn't even need to practice.
Probably not. I mean, but that, I don't know. I feel like that kind of thing reflects badly on us because it's just about winning. It's not about anything else. So, okay. So they're not using... They're using professional athletes and we're not. What if we win with our non-professional athletes? Wouldn't that be an awesome story? Kind of like the one I remember which I didn't even see. The hockey team, the American hockey team that beat the Russian hockey team. That's an amazing story. The Dream Team is never going to go down in history as an amazing story. So the celebration of loss, the acceptance of loss, is something that we should really learn to embrace.
Yeah, and speaking of accepting loss, I wouldn't want to be the Russian hockey team going back to Russia after losing.
Yeah.
You right. Like hockey? You will play plenty of it in Siberia.
Right. There you go. It's cold enough there.
Yeah, it's the hockey you want.
Okay. So another element that I liked in the Avengers was this. There is a really strong moment of forgiveness and compassion from a character who doesn't want or doesn't have any compulsion to give forgiveness or compassion. He even expresses disdain for the person that he's faced with. But then when he is face to face with her and sees her fragility, sees her brokenness in this moment, it's almost like his heart changes. Now, he still stays very stoic, but he says to her, it doesn't matter what you've done before. It matters what you do now and what happens from here on out. And then, amazingly, I mean, they're going out to fight and he wants her to fight with him. Okay. But that's not his motivation. He says, and if you don't come out and fight, that's okay too. I'll come back for you. And he means it. It's not a fake, you know, I'll come back for you. And so the beauty of that is that he really was expressing forgiveness for her past sins. And it is a very Christ-like moment in this film that it goes by very quickly, but it's very noticeable in the fact that it's the stoic character offering this. And I liked it too, because he's, again, one of the lesser characters from the previous movie, but he's getting a lot more development this time around. So that's very helpful for him. And so we have the grace of accepting loss, and we have the grace of forgiveness, two beautiful virtues that I think are just from God, from Christ. I mean, Christ went to the cross. He lost. I mean, for all intents and purposes, at that point, and on Saturday, the day after he's crucified, everybody thought he'd lost. And yet, the victory, the beauty, what happens because he lost is so amazing. And it's for all humanity.
And that's a very common theme in the Bible, too. It's almost in every Bible story, Old and New Testament, where God gives people a vision, like the disciples had this vision of Christ is going to be our Messiah, and then
right.
It all falls apart, but then he rises from the dead. We see this constantly. Joseph is given this dream that he's going to someday be ruling over his brothers. They have their own dream.
Right.
We have a dream of our own. You're naked and bleeding and lying in a pit and sold into slavery.
Right.
And yet he's taken out of the pit. He's made second in command of Egypt. Abraham's promised a son, but then God asks him to sacrifice his son, but then it's only a test. It's like this theme of life, death, resurrection
throughout
the Bible. It's very, very common. All right, I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian talking about the Avengers and other movies. Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
talking about the Avengers and some other movies around the corner here with my good friend Mark Boubian.
All right. Thanks again, Bob. So I guess we can wrap up the Avengers a little bit and turn the corner. Leave it on a positive point because I really did like a lot of the themes. I mentioned it being a mixed bag, but let's forget that and just leave it on the positive and move on to something not exactly movie per se, but something I got to do and not here to brag about it, but I just want to share my experience with some people because it was such a great experience. And a couple of weeks ago, Star Wars Celebration was held in Anaheim and I got to attend with my family. Now, it's sort of like the Comic-Con of Star Wars.
Comic-Con or maybe a Star Trek convention.
No, not quite a Star Trek. I've been to the Star Trek thing.
You'd compare it more to Comic-Con.
Yeah, this was much broader. Had a lot of stuff going on the whole time, which surprised me. I was expecting it to be a lot of downtime, what are we going to do for the 8 hours between Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill? You know what?
And they did have most of the Star Wars actors.
Yes, they did. And that was great. And there were a lot of great surprises, a lot of great fun things that happened. But one of the things that I noticed at Comic-Con when I went last year and is absolutely still true is the beauty of these kind of conventions is that it really is about the people in the movies. Now, we don't get to see the human side of film except the faces that the actors are wearing on screen. And those are masks. I mean, they're actors. They're not those people necessarily. And so we seldom get to see the real people. And
so the guy that played Chewie was there straight from the Royal Shakespeare Academy.
Actually, he's not a Shakespearean actor. He was a shoe store worker.
I believe that.
He was a nurse and he had big feet. Sorry. Okay. That was how he got picked to be Chewbacca. But yeah.
Well, he probably had a more successful career than people that do come out of the Shakespeare Academy.
But yeah, he was there, and that's great. And it was nice to be able to see him for real, his face. I mean, I knew what he looked like from pictures when I was a kid, but I'd never seen him in real life. So it was neat to see them, and you got to hear about their lives and hear about their experiences behind the scenes, so to speak. But it's not quite so trite. It's actually a lot of fun, and there's a lot of really human stories that come from these types of gatherings. And that's what I found at Comic-Con. Absolutely true. I think here the surprise for me was that I really liked these actors and I really had a deep emotional connection to them just because they're the Star Wars people and I grew up with them. And, you know, Mark Hamill was the first Mark. That's my name.
And what is he like in his 60s
on screen?
Now,
yeah, or? He's in his 60s, but he was the first Mark that was ever an actor and one of the very few. And he got to be the best character ever. I mean, come on, Luke Skywalker. So I was like in heaven. Oh, yeah. He's got the same name as me. I'm connected. You know, that's how I...
And there's a story about your daughter and his autograph.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, so this shows the human side of... I paid for an autograph. Now, that's sort of the downside.
Tell our audience, what did an autograph from Mark Hamill cost you?
Now, let me just say that I would not have paid for the autograph had it not been Mark Hamill. He was really the only person I wanted to see or meet. Not the only person I wanted to see, but really the only person I cared to meet. And they were charging for autographs for pretty much everybody. And he was the most expensive. So I said, look, he's the only one I want to meet. So I'm just going to pay for this one. And I got to bring my whole
different
family.
Different autographs at different costs.
Yes. So he was the most expensive by far. But, you know, Carrie Fisher was about half price. So it was $125, which was really expensive.
Wow.
But fortunately, you know, it's not really, I didn't care about the autograph. I just wanted to say hi to him and, you know, maybe have a little bit of.
Yeah. So you're paying for the experience of meeting. I remember when I met Charlton Heston and you had to buy a copy of his book, but at least you walked away with a book.
Right. You got a book. Well, I got an autograph. Nice picture. So, you know, the picture's nice. I got the free picture. Yeah. Okay. So, but the experience was, it was, I think it was worth it in the end because the experience just ended up
being
fun. It was
sure worth it to Mark Hamill in the end.
Right. Well, of course. Yes. Yeah. We could calculate.
I have to think, Mark, what they must have paid him to come to this convention in the first place, and then what everybody else must have paid to go to it. Couldn't he have just given the stupid autograph for free?
Yeah. I don't know why they charge for it. But, you know, maybe it's the company that ran it said you got to charge. You know, and I think the idea of keeping the lines as short as possible might have had something to do with
maybe,
it, too.
Maybe, yeah.
Because I would have never got to see him if it was just everybody at the convention in line the whole time. I mean, so who knows? Maybe there was an advantage in paying. I don't know. But in the end, it ended up being a good thing.
He should have done a discount for just signing his last name and not adding.
Right. There you go. I could have.
Hamill.
I could have signed the first name.
$90.
Yeah. Hey, I have the same name as you. I'm going to sign the first name. You sign the last. And there we go. That would have worked great. But, you know, we didn't get to do that. Let me tell you a few things that I learned from Mark Hamill just in line. Now, the people in front of us, a foreign couple, they barely spoke English.
Were they from Alderaan or?
No, they were from this planet, foreign, not aliens. So, but he noticed that they looked like newlyweds. So he asked if they'd been married. Now I'm eavesdropping, of course, because I'm next in line. And they kind of nodded at him because they didn't speak English very well. But he said, "Oh, I've been married for 36 years and." Kind of very encouraging thing to say to a newlywed couple. I mean, he offered that on his own. They didn't ask him.
It's somebody from Hollywood that's been married that long.
Yes, it's amazing. And now my wife actually wanted to commend him for that before we got in line because she knew he had been married so long. He's still married to his wife that he got married to right after Star Wars Episode 4, the first Star Wars movie.
Well, with all those autographs, I'm sure he provides a good living for her.
Right. Well, you know, there you go. His hand might get tired. But, you know, he's still in movies and stuff. It's not like he's hurting for anything. So, I mean, he's got a good career as a voice actor, too. But again, that's nice. That's something that's very personable from an actor that you never think you're ever going to see. And who would expect him to say, yeah, I've been married 36 years. It's nice that you guys are married. Now, I got to say, you know, a couple things to him, just hi and, you know, and he's busy. But, he's doing the autographs and he's a little bit distant, but he still, you know, talked a little bit back and forth. And we did say something about his marriage and thanked him for what he had done the day before when he did his panel. And he also talked about his wife very fondly in that. And that's another wonderful thing to hear from an actor, from anybody. It's awesome. And it was just very inspiring to me. So I shook his hand at the end and it was very nice. He shook my hand back because that you're not supposed to touch the guy. There's signs everywhere. Don't touch him and don't, you know, talk to him and don't look at him. I mean, it's not quite that bad, but there are signs everywhere.
It's so totally like the soup Nazi on Seinfeld. No soup for you.
Right.
Come
exactly.
Back.
No autograph for you. Get out of here. You looked at me. No, he's not that bad. But so I shook his hand and then my daughter was leaving. She's a huge Star Wars fan and she's very starstruck when it comes to meeting any actor. And so she saw me shaking his hand and she's like, I've got to do that too. So she charges back over from, you know, the exit and, you know, I need to shake your hand too because my dad did. And so he very kindly shakes her hand and then he pulls her toward him and kind of scoots up and kisses her on the cheek. And I mean,
bet she didn't wash her cheek
for 2 days. Yeah. No, she didn't. And she was just in seventh heaven from then on.
Now, how much did they charge for the kissing?
Nothing. It was free and it was worth every penny because it was such a kind thing for him to do. I mean,
that was.
Yeah, it just was awesome. And so, like I said,
it's nice to hear a happy story from Hollywood.
Yeah.
Happily married. It is.
Right.
All right. Well, we have one happy segment left when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bob Siegel.net.
We're down to our last segment already. How the time flies when you're getting autographs from Mark Hamill.
And having fun doing it, of course. Well, that was a great experience. Now, you don't actually have to pay to meet the... If you don't want to meet Mark Hamill or if you don't want to meet Carrie Fisher, you still have an opportunity to see them talk because they get on the stage and they do a presentation. And that's what I mentioned thanking Mark Hamill for earlier. Now, during his presentation, he got to talk a lot about his experience making the Star Wars films, and he had a lot of neat stories, and it really humanizes him. And like I mentioned, he's speaking very kindly of his wife during the presentation. He mentioned his children, I believe. I mean, it's just, you get to know him as a regular person, and it's not quite as intimidating. Like, I got to meet him the next day, and I was not quite as intimidated as I would have been because I kind of got to see him, and hey, he's a regular kind of guy. One story he told was about his own experience with being starstruck. Is that he got to meet Alec Guinness? Of course, he got to meet Alec Guinness, but
that was the one familiar name they did use in the original.
Yes, movie. And I hadn't heard of him because I was a little kid, of course. So I didn't know anybody. But So Alec Guinness is this Sir Alec Guinness. He's Sir Alec. You know, it's not just Alec Guinness. He's a knight of the British Empire. So this is a great
star of Lawrence
actor.
Of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, I mean, all the great David Lean movies, Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing in that movie. So Mark Hamill, starstruck. He got to act with this guy, but he's totally, I don't know what to say to you. And so Alec Guinness invited him to lunch one day, you know, just to sort of break the ice. And while he was out to lunch, you know, he said, I kind of calmed down because we started talking and it just became like, again, like meeting a regular person. You get to know the person and it takes away some of that, you know, hero worship that's going on. But he's with his, Alec Guinness had his wife there and she's an artist apparently at that time. She was painting stuff and she had painted a mosque of some sort and she was showing it during the lunch. And their waiter was a... Muslim, I believe. And he came up and he saw the picture of the mosque and screamed and grabbed it and tore it apart and right there in front of them and was yelling at them in, Egyptian or something. They're in Libya, I believe, at this point or something like that. so they're completely taken aback. And then they learn afterwards that she had painted a sacred thing and that it wasn't allowed for her to be painting it. So she had made a cultural faux pas, of course, and it wasn't, you know, she hadn't done anything horrible, but, you know, that I guess the drastic response is the way the culture there was worked. So anyway, Mark Hamill's response, of course, after the guy kind of calms down and leaves, an art critic. So Alec Guinness, you know, she does a perfect Alec Guinness, and I'm not even going to try, but he said, you know, Alec Guinness chuckled and that he... That's when he learned that Alec Guinness kind of liked the sort of American style humor. And so he would make jokes a lot during the filming. And so that was sort of his bonding point with Alec Guinness. So, yeah, that's a nice story that you get to learn about the human beings involved with the making of these
movies. Were any of the people from the prequels involved in this convention?
No, I was shocked.
Probably because they're not going to, we assume we won't be seeing any of them
right.
in the next movie.
But I would think they would have been invited. Now, actually, I should correct myself. There was a couple of the lesser characters, like the girl, I can't remember her name, unfortunately, but the girl that played Aunt Beru in the prequels was there.
Oh, the young Aunt Beru.
Yes. Yeah, okay. And there were a couple of other people. There's the one of the Jedi that's killed in episode 3,
right,
was there.
Right, where the Jedi are all betrayed.
Yeah, and, you know, Boba Fett, there's been a couple of Boba Fetts, but the main one was there. But he's obviously from the original series. So it was mainly original series people, but there was a scattering of people, but none of the primaries, none of the principals.
And Harrison Ford was not.
No, he was ill, of course, because he had crashed a plane into a golf course.
Would he have been there if he hadn't been there?
I believe so. They really did make it sound like he would have. And since they did have all of the actors from the original movie that were primaries, the Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, they had Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca, and let's see, I don't know if there was anybody else. But then obviously you would have expected Harrison Ford to be there with them.
Now, what did you learn about the forthcoming movie that you could pass on? Did they give any, I don't mean a spoiler but did they tell you anything about the movie?
They didn't. Actually, the beauty of this, I went to this, I hate spoilers. I make that clear in every time I give a review, but, and I went to this thinking I'm going to get spoilers. And I just said, okay, that's it. I'm just going to accept it. There's no way to get around it. I want to go to this. It's either don't go or get, you know, or get spoilers. Well, it turns out that they were completely anti-spoiler. I mean, insanely anti-spoiler. So I didn't learn anything of significance, only enough to get me excited.
Did you at least learn, are Luke and Han Solo, are they going to have more like cameos, or are they going to be heavily featured?
I believe they are primary characters. Now, there's basically what it looks like. It's the passing of the baton from the original to the new characters. Right. So there's three new people. And there's obviously a strong emphasis on.
I hope they don't undo things, though. Like, I'm kind of expecting Han and Leia to have a troubled marriage or a divorce or something.
I don't know.
Wouldn't do anything like that.
Yeah, I hope not. And I don't think they will, because that's sort of out of the realm of Star Wars. I mean, the most serious Star Wars movie was obviously Revenge of the Sith. That was a very, very serious and heavy movie. I don't think they're going to go that far by any means. And I think something like a divorce and marital tension would just take the fun out of the movie.
Well, if they were divorced, they'd probably have them get together again at the end. But
let's hope not.
Yeah.
There's no hint whatsoever that's the case.
And it's the director of Lost that's directing this?
J.J. Abrams,
J.J. Abrams, and it's owned by Disney now.
Right.
So we're not going to see that opening 20th Century Fox thing.
Well, we still might, because
I'm
not sure.
I've come to associate that with Star Wars.
Yeah, funny.
It's almost like...
It's our whole
every
generation.
Every time I see that in another movie now, I think Star Wars is about to start.
Right, I do too. It's funny. And, you know, I thought that as a kid, and I'm like, it must just be me. I'm crazy, but
well,
everybody...
it is still Lucasfilms, though. I noticed that in the preview,
right,
which I was surprised, because I thought Lucas sold the whole franchise.
He did, but they own Lucasfilm, and it's still Lucasfilm.
Oh,
so.
Okay, so it's still Lucasfilm, but they own Lucasfilm.
It's like Pixar. Disney owns Pixar, but it's still
Pixar.
They
own ABC, and they own the Muppets.
Right, they own the Muppets. That's the hardest one for me to accept. Not ABC or ESPN. Those are kind of throwaways for me. But yeah, that's the way it goes. Now, one good thing that Disney has been doing that I think they may have started actually before they bought Lucas is they're working Star Wars into their TV network. Now, they've done a couple of bad things. Like, they have some sitcoms that they... Like, one girl goes to Skywalker Ranch and C-3PO is there, and it was kind of hokey. But that shows...
A sitcom or a reality show?
No, it's a sitcom. Yeah. And so, you know, the C-3PO talks to her, and then somebody comes and shoots at them with a blaster. But that show was sort of a twisted, kind of funny show that fit the show, but it still kind of felt, oh, no. This is Disney's going to buy this and they're going to do this kind of stuff.
Well, the collaboration works on the ride Star Tour. So that is an awesome ride. And
now,
so there, I love the Disney Lucas collaboration.
And so I'm citing this example to show you that that's actually does not seem to be the way they're headed. What they're doing is they're treating it respectfully. So they had the series, The Clone Wars, which was an animated series. I believe, Bob, we saw a
few of those.
And it was okay, but they did create a couple of contradictions, which episode 3 that I hated. So I had problems
with all the fans and nerds. How are they going to get away with a contradiction?
Well, so I believe Disney has stated, now I've rumors, I'm not, I haven't confirmed this, but that show is not considered canon. However, anything new is. So they've got a new show called
that term that used to just apply to the Bible. What's canon,
right now it
what's
has to apply
canon.
To.
Yeah.
Right.
They do that with Star Trek, too. They say, well, the novels aren't canon.
Right.
The animated series isn't canon.
Yeah, so that animated series supposedly is not. However, there's a new show called Star Wars Rebels, which actually they have gone to great lengths to... It's still got a dorky kid that's a little bit, you know, annoying, but it feels like Star Wars. It's absolutely astounding. I couldn't believe it when I watched the show. It's like Star Wars Episode 4. It's about the Episode 4 Rebellion's beginnings.
Okay.
And it's a very good show. It's fun. It's not too heavy. And so Star Wars is, Disney is being very respectful with what they've got from Lucas.
All right.
So
well, it's coming out at Christmas time, so we'll have Mark back to see if the product was worth the expectation. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.